Can everyone hear me okay back there? Good. I'll try not to overwhelm the microphone. How many of you are in Second Life already? Good. Okay, great. You'll know me in Second Life as either Lehi Bookmite, who is a frog lady with white hair, or Zahava Werfox, who is a more normal-looking lady but with a really big behind. So I wanted to talk a little bit about our approach to Second Life today, but because our particular island was built entirely by students, I thought I would begin by actually letting one of the students involved talk. During the PowerPoint, I'm going to dim the lights, I hope that's okay, so that you can see a little bit better. So let me see if I can do that. So our problem was, how could we affect a virtual immersive environment, trying to keep costs low and using a facility that already existed with student workers. So I would like to let one of the original students that was involved in this project talk about his experience with it.
Hello, my name is Nicholas DePere. I was a project leader for Lehi Island in Second Life between 2008 and 2009, and I thought I would share a few lessons I learned while working on Lehi's Second Life initiative. I have to admit that when Johanna gave me the task of creating a virtual campus of Lehi in a virtual world, I thought she had gone nuts, but I needed a job and was willing to go nuts for one. So lesson number one, it's okay to go crazy for a job that sounds like a ton of fun. Just don't let on that you think your boss is a bit crazy. So what is Second Life? Well, it's a virtual world that has its own currency, its own way of interacting, and you can create an avatar and live a virtual life there. You can buy and sell virtual goods, take classes, walk through virtual museums, and you can even fly. Because of the educational possibilities, Lehi decided it wanted in on the virtual world. Say hello to Lehi Island. When I first started this project, we had a piece of virtual land that we could do anything we wanted with. When I got hold of it, the piece of land was one huge mountain. That had to go. And then we had to build a virtual version of Lehi. In 3D, that people could walk through, hold classes in, and recognize different buildings. It had to be interactive, and it had to be fun. I had to do all of this, and I had never used Second Life before. When I landed on Lehi Island, I literally had a huge mountain of work in front of me. So I just started clicking and flying, and soon the island started to look like the mini campus that I envisioned. And I couldn't have done this alone. My first task was finding a team of designers and developers who were about...
Okay, so our first task was to find a team, and that was difficult. No one had used Second Life before, and Nico was actually the second person who was involved with Second Life. Originally, I had hired an architect, architecture student, and we made some mistakes, but I'll talk more about that in a moment. So the unusual way that we approached Second Life was that we approached it as a theatrical medium. This is partially because my own background was in theater, as well as education. I also teach communications at Lehi in addition to being an instructional technologist. And so we kind of bent toward that direction. And I have a little bit of a quote here by Oscar Wilde. But it definitely grew consciously out of the philosophy of theater and of learning. So we started out by doing research. I actually assigned people that I thought would be involved in the project to just do nothing else during their time in the lab but exploring other universities and other places in Second Life and writing me reports about what they liked and what they didn't like. So who are we? Lehi University has 6,300 students. We're located in Bethlehem, PA. We have 464 faculty and 1,215 staff. The IMRC is one of three media centers. We're part of Library and Technology Services at Lehi. We have one full-time staff person, you're looking at her, And we have between 25 and 30 student workers. Right now, I think we only have 23. But our model, and this is kind of what made this all work, is based on mentoring. The people who are more experienced teach best practices and what they know to the newer students. We also do web authoring, web-based data design, digital video graphic design, and other kinds of gaming. We're, for instance, right now developing a virtual aquarium, which is going to teach biochemical processes to students in a way that, as a chemistry professor who is in charge of it, would say doesn't kill the fish. So what did we know when we began? Well, we had all become convinced that some sort of virtual immersive environment would be a key to the future of learning. Many of us are convinced it's going to be the next new wave, and that it will at some point take off in a similar fashion to that of the web. Of course, it's ideal for modeling, simulation, collaborative learning, distance learning, social and academic scaffolding, I'm going to talk more about that in a minute, and immersion. I want to mention Greg Ryman, our faculty development director, who was the first great cheerleader of Second Life at Lehigh. And it was through Greg's efforts that we purchased an island through New Media Consortium. And he was the one who asked for people to help, and I jumped at the opportunity. So here's the historical philosophical perspective we developed. First of all, we started thinking about what really is virtual reality. And really, if you think about virtual reality and you do a little research on it, you can find out that representatives of virtual life go back many, many years. Earliest reference we found in several articles was by Pliny the Elder, who talks about a competition between Zeus and Parrhasius, where they produce a painting that is so lifelike that one of the artists is actually fooled by the other, thinking that it is actually real and the birds are about to take off. But on a more recent level, or something that people might not often know if they're not involved in visual arts, is that medieval cathedrals, for instance, sculpture and architecture throughout the medieval times were used to teach theology by the church to the largely illiterate masses. And this is why you often see these statues and these tableaus in cathedrals in, for instance, Paris or wherever. That is Chartres, actually. Oliver Frau, in his book Virtual Art, gives examples of murals dating back to the 16th century. Again, very often with a church base. Here is a depiction of heaven. But the first real modern technological innovation we can refer to here is 360-degree film projection, which was at the World's Fair in 1900. I was sure I had seen a bit of this film somewhere, but I read online that it doesn't exist, so it must have been something else. I saw some sort of film of a balloon ride, but it wasn't this one. And this gave people the idea of how to create virtual reality. Of course, we also have the literary arts, which have talked since the beginning of time about heaven and hell. Science fiction like Jules Verne, fantasy like Alice in Wonderland, we're right next to Disney World, though that seems appropriate. The religious narratives, of course, I had to show this. This really, I already talked about visual a little bit, but it's Hieronymus Bosch, and I love this one. And it is really a very interesting perspective on what another world might be like. So if we're going to immerse ourselves in the visual arts, obviously the first thing you would think of would be theater. And I immediately thought of Antonin Artaud. So virtual reality was originally coined by Antonin Artaud in his book Theater and Its Double, in which he talks about how theater isn't used to its full potential and how you can actually make something like virtual reality appear if you break down the fourth wall. The fourth wall would be, how many of you know about Antonin Artaud or the fourth wall? Okay, a couple of you do. The idea then is that right now we have a fourth wall, which is right here between me and you. It's an invisible wall, and it creates a sense of distance so that you as an audience don't get as fully involved. Artaud's idea was to break down that fourth wall. And you can do that by, if I don't trip here, going out into the audience and confronting them. So if I'm in your face, you have to pay more attention to me, of course. But he also had other ideas for doing it. Part of it had to do with a predecessor named Alfred Jarry, who put forth a play called Ubu Wa. Anybody know about that? The turn of the century, you do. You theater background? In which loud noise and obscenities and outrageous things would happen on stage for the sole purpose of involving the audience. It created a huge scandal at the time. By the time Artaud published his book, Theater and Its Double, the double being real life, in 1938, he was already experimenting with ideas of how to alter the mise-en-scene between the audience and the actors on stage. These are some quotes I'd like to read. Every real effigy has a shadow which is its double. Like all magic cultures expressed by appropriate hieroglyphs, the true theater has its shadows too. And of all the languages and all the arts, the theater is the only one left whose shadows have shattered their limitations. For the theater as for culture, it remains a question of naming and directing shadows. Not only destroying false shadows, but prepares the way for a new generation of shadows around which assembles the true spectacle of life. He also compared theater to disease, to the plague, in fact, with the idea that theater should be so strong and the experience should be so strong that a person catches it like he would catch a sickness, experiences a catharsis, and is changed. And when you think about that, I mean, if you go to see a really good play or a really good lecture, the content of that will change you. It does change you. You do absorb it, and it does affect a sort of evolution. So we thought of this as more working from the external to the internal. So what do we see outside us that can affect us? And then we started thinking about, well, what about working the other way around? And this is where teaching theory came in. And I immediately thought of Vygotsky. How many of you, I'm sure most of you are familiar with the zone of proximate development. How many of you are familiar with Vygotsky? Okay, some more of you are familiar with that. But Second Life is an ideal medium for that. When you think of it, the idea of the zone of proximate development says that you come with a set of experiences that begins even in the womb, and that learning is actually going out into a zone that's separate from your experience and exploring it. The teacher is the mentor who guides you through the zone. And as you go through the zone, you incorporate what you learn into your own body of experience. When you encounter unfamiliar material or content, you might experience cognitive dissonance. And here's a graphic of that. So after thinking about how we wanted to approach this, we decided we wanted to do something on both levels, to have enough coming in from the external to be involving, but also trying to incorporate the internal, the idea of exploration. We noticed that many sites in Second Life are very passive, and we wanted to make our island not as passive as what we've seen in other places. Hopefully we've succeeded. So initially we decided to make one recognizable building and just leave a lot of space. The idea was to draw in faculty and have them come up with ideas that they would bring to us that we would develop in order to affect their ideas. So our first attempt, however, was sort of a dismal failure. As I said, I hired an architecture student thinking that, having heard in some conference that it was easy to incorporate Maya or AutoCAD into Second Life. We discovered that was not the case. We did wind up building a building that we had based in AutoCAD and importing it into the island, We had it sitting on top of a mountain because Lehi is on a mountain. It was not what we wanted. Everyone agreed it had been a failure. The architecture student left, and that summer, almost right after he left, Nico, Nicholas DePire, who was the first student you worked, you heard from, walked in the door. And he and I and Greg Ryman sat down, and we started thinking about a different approach. Nico had a graphic design degree from a university in Paris already and was coming back for his second degree in the U.S. So we tore down what we had done, and we started using the building blocks of Second Life, PRIMS. Now, PRIMS, in comparison, and those of you who have built in Second Life know this, in comparison to something like AutoCAD or Maya or Rhino or Revit are really, really kind of antique and clunky. But we worked with it and we got better at it. And this time, what we did differently, and if you are considering starting your own island, I would strongly recommend this, we mapped the island. We actually sat down and figured out where we wanted things to go, what we wanted on the island to begin with, including the amount of space that we would have to develop new ideas. We mapped it out with Greg Ryman, and then, and only then, did we begin to build. So we had a good idea of the experience before we began. And as I've said, if I haven't said this or emphasized this enough, leaving a large area for the experimentation, a large sandbox, is crucial. Leave space in the island. I've gone on a lot of islands that everything is really built over. By the summer of 2008, the island's beginning to take shape. I had heard some tales of people coming in and hacking the island and everything getting destroyed, so I was really nervous about going public. But we went public, and it was no big deal. Amazingly, things stayed where they were supposed to be, and our problems were minimal. And by October 2009, we had a grand opening of the island. Obstacles we faced. Permissions gave us many headaches. We finally resolved the issue by dividing the island up into packets. Wherever we had a new project going, we would take that packet and we would give permission to the person who is responsible for getting people or teaching people inside that packet. But we also wound up giving the basic ownership for the building and administration to one avatar, a generic avatar named Lehi Bookmite. That was key. When people build, they use that avatar, no other. Every time we've tried to assign permissions to other people, we've had some bad results. We also had to get over the idea that we were afraid of things falling apart. Things do fall apart. The idea is to have good housekeeping and to keep all of your parts in an inventory so you can easily retrieve them. At one point, we were trying to do something different, terraforming, and we managed to eradicate a good part of the island. Be careful when you hit delete. we had to call a New Media Consortium, and they did a rollback. The flip side of that was that we became a lot more comfortable. The worst had happened, and yet we were able to recover. One of the first projects we had was we had our counseling center come in and ask us to design something, which they wanted to use for research. They wanted to find out if virtual reality, if they could do counseling in virtual reality that would be similar in results to that of a telephone counseling and even to real life counseling. And in fact, show you what they did, what we did. We made a building that looks very much like where counseling services is in real life. And because one of the contextual elements of this was that we didn't want people to feel embarrassed going in. So we made it, you had to go inside, you teleported into an area that was very secure. Only the counselor in charge of the session had control of the space, and he only let those avatars in that he knew were supposed to be there. We designed a giant clamshell underwater. From the inside, it's transparent. and kind of beautiful. You can look out, it's very relaxing, the water is flowing around you, you see fish going by, and you can have your session inside. Some of the other things we had to deal with was how to keep sound, which we did by building in a certain area, which we did by building an invisible box, and permissions, which is basically the teleporter sorts people out. Only those people who are entered can come in and have permission. The research that came out of this, which has been presented at national conferences, showed that was almost no difference at all between telephone counseling and virtual reality, and even, and this was surprising to them, very little difference between face-to-face counseling and virtual reality. In fact, they found that virtual reality had some really good aspects that you wouldn't find in face-to-face counseling. For instance, people who are borderline autistic dealt very well with this medium, and it helped them develop their social skills as they adjusted to college. People who had social fear, again, could use this as a way to reach out without being physically present and then evolving into physical presence. So it was a good way of scaffolding people into collegiate life. This is one of my favorite recent ones. This is a fairly new site, and this is the planetarium. Dr. Carol Kiley came to see me a while back, and she had, with her husband, done microscopy on matter that had been brought back from the moon by Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin back in Apollo 11. They'd put it under the microscopes, x-rayed it, they'd done three-dimensional imagery of it. We made a website, and when we decided to do a planetarium, we featured her research in it. The planetarium, that's actually a way to get to NASA, that board. You can press on it, go to NASA. And you can see here also that one of the newer aspects of the newest iteration of Second Life is the ability to put up screens which will feature interactive URLs, PowerPoints, videos, and as you can see, she just touched that screen and actually was able to make the website work, which is really cool. Didn't have it before, I guess it was May or June that was introduced. And that, to me, this is the difference. This is that difference of breaking down the fourth wall that we didn't have before. And I don't know if you noticed the roof, we were able to create a bent screen, so which replicates that of a planetarium. And very exciting. Those are the x-rayed particles of moon dust. Another newer site came as the result of one of our vice provosts coming forth and asking us if we would be interested in creating a chapel that would give the experience of Islam to people who are not familiar with Islam. And we thought, well, why just Islam? And we created our interfaith chapel, which is a replica of the real chapel at Lehi, but with a difference. Right now, this is set at the real chapel. This is a simulation of the real chapel at Lehi with the beautiful glass windows and the gorgeous wooden ceilings. That's typical of the Gothic architecture at Lehi and typical of cathedral types of settings. But if you want to have a different kind of religious experience or to learn about other religions, you just have to go to the panel on the wall and press a button, and voila, we have an Orthodox synagogue. And now this is a traditional synagogue, so we have the balcony for the separation of genders. Women sit up in the balcony, watch the proceedings down. How did we do this? We did research on the different kinds of architecture for different kinds of religions online, and then basically built our own using the elements that we found were the most common and necessary, involving the different spiritual leaders in our campus in the construction to make sure that what we did was accurate. And finally, of course, the Islamic interior. And there it goes. And now we are in a mosque. We haven't done this yet, but we're going to have accompanying documentation advising people about the interiors, what they mean, different aspects of the interiors. For instance, for this particular experience, people will be advised to move their shoes, to remove their shoes and cover their heads. We used a same kind of idea for theater. We created an underwater theater with three different kinds of seating arrangements, both cafe, theater in the round, and also traditional concert seating. We based that on the idea of flexible seating in Zirkle Hall, which is the basement of Carnegie Hall, and worked with a voice teacher, Deborah Field, to effect this. Her idea is that it allows students who are performers to have more experience performing in front of a live audience than they might have with a limited space available on campus. And the theater, by the way, is underwater. The Art Tower is one of my favorites as well, because it shows what you can do in Second Life that you couldn't do in real life. The Art Tower is built out of shards of glass. The paintings on them, currently we have an exhibit of the work of Beresford Booth, who is one of our professors of art. You can see that each easel has two paintings on it, and the little green globe is actually an audio tour. So that as you go around to the different objects, this little ball follows you, and when you press on hit on the painting, you actually get a short audio explanation of the painting. Barris really liked the Art Tower. He did a lecture, I think two lectures in it. He wants to do at least one every semester. He was talking about doing it weekly, but he always, I think he kind of overshot that one. But he said he found himself slipping into a correlative mode of presence with his avatar describing the meanings and history of his practice. He really enjoyed it. So I thought I would have some more of the people who developed Second Life talk to you about their experience. And this is Jeff Remling, who's a graduate PhD student who works with me, and Maura Medaglia, who is now a senior and has been involved. She's been involved with Second Life since the time of Nico, and she's the one who developed the chapel.
Second Life can be used for education, be a valuable asset for several reasons. Number one, you can use this as a means of communication, especially for distance communication, distance learning. Students can stay at home, do their work in the, you know, stay in their bedrooms, get up, get log on Second Life, and attend a class anywhere in the world, in theory. Another great use for Second Life is for language studies. Many of the islands in Second Life are not English-speaking islands. You can go to Paris. There's a great mock-up of Paris on one of the islands. You can go to Germany. You can go to Spanish-speaking countries, Korean, Japanese. Another good reason for Second Life good use is to turning abstract concepts into physical constructs that you can actually see and manipulate. One project I'm doing right now is with computer data structures. We're actually made arrays, physical little shoving boxes we can put in strings. We have then nodes, which contain a component with a location for data and a pointer to another node. With that, you can construct linked lists. We can extend that into, we can do searches with it. We can do trees, binary trees, and actually see the students actually see how the data manipulates. Yeah, Second Life can be fun for the students. If they get into it, if they like the topic, they can get more involved, they can physically see it. That would hopefully be more of a draw for them to come and play with Second Life, get online. We've had various modes of Second Life playing around with it. Part of the way I actually do some of the programming codes, something difficult, is find some way to have fun with it. Usually means to embarrass your friendly avatar next door, one of the other people on there. And if you can do something with this, teleport them upside down, or have something chase after them, that technology can be changed to make the art link, for example, which follows people around and tells them what art they're looking at. So yeah, you can have fun with Second Life.
Hi, I'm Mara Medaglia. I've worked at the IMRC for the past year and a half developing Second Life. I've built iACoca Hall, the planetarium and the concert hall and Packer Chapel, which both have a functionality that allows the interiors to be switched. The concert hall can rotate between four different setups, theater in the round, auditorium, among others, and the Packer Chapel is indicative of four different faiths. We have the original setup of Packer Chapel as it is on Lehigh's campus for the Christian and Catholic faiths. We have a Hindu temple, a Jewish synagogue, and a Muslim mosque. I'm majoring in graphic design and marketing, getting 2 degrees, and it's actually applicable for both. From a design standpoint, it's more obvious how it's useful. There's a huge aesthetic element to being an architect in Second Life, making sure that everything's coherent and there's some creative license in it, making it interactive and kind of being aware of uses, and that's what design is all about, catering to the needs and making something useful to the public. On the more business side of things, it's gotten me involved in project management and being aware of the full perspective of the project. As a more senior staff member working on it, I've been able to have more reign over it and have more input into the project, and I have more flexibility and control in seeing where this project goes and being able to actually address the needs of campus and make a plan as to how to address those steps. So I've really been able to integrate the design and the marketing well. It's been a great privilege to be able to work on it and to be able to learn from the new medium and learn the different ways that it can be useful, and hopefully I'll be able to not only just talk about these experiences and getting new jobs, but be able to offer ways for future employers to use Second Life as well.
So I've been blessed because I have a facility where I have the most talented, the greatest students you can possibly imagine. They designed this. It's been a great experience for them. I've been very lucky. Having a center that does multimedia design to begin with was, of course, a fortunate aspect of my situation. The initial maintenance and purchase cost, you can see here, I received an email just before I came here telling me that, I haven't verified this yet, maybe someone here knows about this, that the discount for educational consortiums is going to go away and Linden Labs is doing away with it. This is unfortunate news, and of course it makes you think about all of these companies that lure you in with a discount and then they cut the discount as soon as it's being used. And I'll talk more about that in a minute. Main work on the site, at the beginning of the summer, we counted up about 1,300 hours. Okay, that's a lot of hours, but because we use student work, it was a lot student workers, it was a lot cheaper than it would have been if we had used professionals. The cost is relative also. Because we do multiple projects at any time, students tended to work on Second Life in their downtime from working on another project. So if we had a priority website, for instance, coming in that someone had to develop, we'd have them working on that. And then when they were done with that and were waiting for the next project, they would work on this. It did involve a learning curve. It takes between 20 and 30 hours for a graphic designer to really reach full speed on using prims, and that's partially dependent on their own graphic background. We've had about a dozen people now work in Second Life. Not all of them were graphic designers. I've had several programmers and several people who just were gifted with graphics. Problems we face. Well, it's not cheap. You know, I was sort of shocked when I added up all the hours. And with, of course, Linden Labs now raising the price for educational institutions, it's going to become more expensive. Stability is sometimes a problem. Of course, it is with any server, I suppose. But, for instance, recently I've been experiencing a number of problems. For some reason, I don't know why. There is a learning curve to use Second Life. Any teacher who goes into a new medium should spend some time with their students, making them comfortable in the medium, or they will experience cognitive dissonance. And there is some cognitive dissonance to begin with, because it is a new medium, and people, when they get transported into it, have problems. And being able to help people through that cognitive dissonance can be a challenge. One thing that we've done this semester is we created 30 generic avatars so that if a professor wants to go and take his class into Second Life, rather than going through the whole process of building an avatar, we just give them one. And they can go right in and have their class and see how it works for them. I think a lot about what will happen with Second Life or the future of virtual reality. Is it going to be Second Life? I don't know. I mean, there are problems with Second Life. Any of you who have been at the vendors downstairs and took a look at the new Xbox and the fantastic graphics with that, and then look at what we were just looking at, which, though beautiful, is still sort of cartoonish in comparison. I mean, I have this dream that somebody like Microsoft, who developed the Xbox, would all of a sudden decide to come up with their version of something like Second Life and give us maybe cloud computing or something, could suspend it. And that in the best of all possible worlds, we could pick up all of our structures that we did in Second Life and transfer them into this new medium. I mean, that would be wonderful. But it is really a question. We spent all this time, we're kind of loath to do something else, of course. You know, we've yet to see what will happen with Second Life. I mean, the other part of this also is the idea of open source. I'm a big open source fan, and I know there's going to be a session later today about virtual technologies. What time is that?
4:30.
At 4:30, where they're going to be discussing about an open source alternative, which I'm very anxious to see. Initial setup for distance participants can sometimes be tricky and should be effected before any actual class. It's not huge. It's not terrible. I mean, you really have to do that with almost any technology, like Illuminate or something. But, you know, you have to keep it in mind. And if you're going to be, like, going into a conference presentation like this, and you have 15 minutes for setup, it's not always the best thing to depend only on this medium. There's the idea of agility. A corporate structure like Linden Labs may not be agile enough to handle the demands of the technological change and the way of the future. I think another reason that students have cognitive dissonance when they get into Second Life is because they are used to gaming environments like Xbox or Wii. Linden needs to keep up with that. Still, it's going to take some change. I don't think we are at the point where we're going to be able to change over tomorrow. But because I really have come to absolutely believe in the virtual life medium, I think that if you have the means, by all, and you can do it, experiment in Second Life. I think it's just getting ready for what will ultimately happen. And also, I wanted to add that this, again, and emphasize that this new edition of Second Life does make the posting of any kind of multimedia very, very easy. That hadn't been the case until just recently. So our perspective is that academic reality, virtual reality, is here to stay. Second Life may not be what we use in the future, but exploring its potential is key. My approach may not be the only one, but taking a theatrical as well as an educational perspective as we think about Second Life might be a good way to go into it. Well, as I said, our faculty development director was the first person who decided to do this, and he did this at the urging of several faculty members, especially a couple in the College of Education, who were very much into exploring the potential of this. So we kind of had the stage set to go into this. He came up with the money, and we went ahead and went into it. I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think it's used as much as it could be. And in fact, to that extent, we just recruited a marketing professor and his 60 students to come up with ways of getting the campus more involved with Second Life. We've had maybe a couple dozen professors having classes in there at one time or another. We've got an architecture professor about to do modeling in the sandbox. We've got several things coming up, but I still would like to get the word out. Another idea I had of, which I'm going to implement when I go back, is to get a committee of or some sort of group of the professors who have used Second Life in the past together to talk about ways to get other faculty involved. You know, with any new technology, you're going to run into that wall of, speaking of walls, of, you know, that kind of resistance to new ideas. Yes, as I said, in fact, that graduate student, she's a senior, actually, she's a super senior, Maura Medaglia. Her independent study this semester is going to be to market Second Life and to help get this out to the campus. So again, I'm using the power of students to go out to the campus. Yes? Oh, yes. Yeah, that's what I referred to earlier. In October of last year, we had a big rollout where we had a faculty session and we had food and we did all of that and we invited everyone to come. So that also was a great consciousness-raising idea. You can import different kinds of applications into Second Life. We've been doing a lot of that. Actually, you want to hear a funny story? We were experimenting with how to make things happen, projectiles, or make things move in Second Life. And so one day they were using the idea, this is horrible, of guns. And shooting, you know, there was only a couple of the people on the island, they were shooting each other. And all of a sudden, a naked man appeared. Now, those of you who are familiar with Second Life will know that there are some strange dimensions to this sometimes when you go to places. You have to be careful of that. And we didn't know who this person was, so we were kind of looking at this person. And we're thinking, oh, you know, I don't know. And one of the students, because they do this to each other, you can hear that how they fool around while they're experimenting to try to make things happen. The idea here was we were going to have cars and we have fish and things moving around on their own, like kind of like your students. Well, I'm sorry to say that one of my students, thinking that this was another student they knew that was giving them a hard time, shot the naked man. The naked man turned out to be the head of counseling services, who didn't know he was naked. And, you know, this created some ballyhoo, and, you know, he called Greg, and we had to reassure him that we weren't, you know, purporting violence on campus and explaining what we were doing and so forth and so on. So you can have these odd things happen. But my answer to you is I'm sure it's possible. It seems like what you might want to do is get some graduate students or something doing, we could make some generic, my response would be make generic children. And have graduate students work the generic children and then have the teachers practice that way. Yeah, right?
You can make bots, but I think the idea...
You can make bots, yeah. I think role-playing is better, yeah. I agree, thank you.
There are scripts out there.
For bots, yes, there are. There are scripts out there for bots, and you can program them. But role-playing, I think, would be the perfect answer to your question. Well, in fact... we began with having small classrooms somewhere. I mean, that's how we began. And almost, I mean, every building on the island, everything we've done has been in response to some faculty member who wanted something. So it's not like we didn't do anything arbitrarily. We would rather have the blank space. So there is no advantage. If you're first going into it, yeah, go to a classroom somewhere and try that out. The advantage here was to be able to customize things to, for instance, the counseling center to what people wanted, the art tower to what people wanted, the concert hall to what people wanted.
Okay, it's my job to kind of keep on time. Thank you all very much, and please join me in thanking Joanne for her presentation.
Thank you.